Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Super Deluxe Games Cast. It is the final podcast of the year.
It'll be very difficult for us to sneak in another one.
I want to stress, not the final podcast ever. We will be back next week.
That you fucking know of.
Just the final podcast of 2023. And we've got a very, very cool 2024 coming up. Obviously, beginning of the year, we're going to do our annual Game of the Year show. Which we do every year. We talk about the games that we love most in 2023. In March, we are making our big return to PAX.
Yeah.
The entire team is
everybody but Jeff will be there.
We are going to have some kind of a podcast panel. I'm not going to tell you anything else about it yet. But it's going to be a lot of fun. And we're really looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody in chat said Britt is supposed to be in, but I can't see Britt. This is Britt Erasure. I will not stand for this. She'll be back. She'll be back. She is going to get something. I missed what she's going
she's
to get.
She's going to make coffee.
Coffee. Okay.
It's higher on the hierarchy of needs.
Yes. Like, yes, it is.
Gotcha. Okay. Right. So with that being said, final show of the year, guys. We're closing out 2023.
With like a surprisingly beefy news topic, like sneaking in at the last minute is maybe one of the potentially most impactful news stories of the year for the gaming industry. So
it really is. So it's very, very interesting to kind of end the podcast year on, I won't say a good or a bad note, just a very, very complex note.
Yeah.
Much like the complex notes in this old fashioned that I'm drinking.
What whiskey did you use to make that old fashioned?
So here's what I did. I used an ounce of Amaro, which is which is a sweet liqueur.
Yeah.
And I used 2 ounces of Contradiction, which is a 90 proof bourbon that I'm fond of.
Okay.
Rounded it out with a few dashes of bitters, a sugar cube. And I don't have any big blocky ice cubes right now, so I am kind of a heathen. I just dropped a little ice cube in here. Yeah. It's not what I wanted.
You do make a mean old fashioned.
I make a fucking sick old fashioned.
I'm right. Rocking with just a little miter small batch straight.
Derek, that's a nice glass you got.
Yeah, there. I don't know where that comes from.
We need to get Sam one of these.
I do have the coffee mug. I do have the official
you got the coffee mug, but
coffee
we
mug.
Need to give
we
I,
need
I,
to we
need you,
update the I, merch store and update like the charities and shit like that we
that is definitely
the money
a good
to.
Idea.
Yeah. It's definitely
when,
time
when
to get back to
update
that.
Update it, ping me, and we can arrange the whiskey glass.
We still need to make the official. We need to make purple beanies.
That's harder than it looks.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm looking into getting us custom-made SDGC face masks for PAX, so we can all be in matching purple masks with the white logo.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah.
That is a good idea. No, so we're closing out 2023 with an interesting show, a complex topic. But as always, we are going to kick the podcast off with what we have been playing. And Derek, I'm going to throw it to you.
Yeah,
first.
Let's start with me because Britt is currently making coffee. And I'll go before our esteemed guest Sam. So I was joking before we get on. Unfortunately, I'm just going to have to talk for a little bit about my recent experience getting Digimon pilled. So I joked a little before Christmas that, you know, that feeling sometimes when your brain tells you you've got to go back and replay like an old game from your childhood. You don't know if it's good or not, but you're going to try it. My brain was like, dude, go back and play the original Digimon World for PS1. And I was like, this is absolutely going to lead me down a rabbit hole of just playing Digimon games, right? Yeah. Okay, cool. Good to know. It turns out that there's a great little like quality of life and improvement ROM hack for the original game that was released recently. So like I tried that out. I streamed a little bit of it. You can go back and check out my time with the first couple hours of the original Digimon World. And like, it's a fun game. It's messy. Like it's kind of a janky like PS1 you know, monster raising exploration city building RPG. That's
dude, that horse. All right, Derek, I got to talk about that horse.
I did have a horrible muscular horse monster with a robot mask and human teeth.
Derek, that horse was oddly sexual in a way that I don't like.
Digimon designs. Here's the thing. Pokemon designs are all drawn by like 40-year-olds who just want to make a cute thing. And Digimon designs all look like they were drawn in a notebook margin by like a 13-year-old.
Oh, Digimon were specifically created because people were horny and didn't quite want to admit
that. In ways they couldn't figure out, right?
Right.
So it's funny you mention that because I was just talking about the inappropriately sexual muscular horse that Derek was playing as.
I was not playing as him. He was my partner.
He was your partner. Right. Whatever. That's yeah. Like I found it vaguely disturbing.
What was the Digimon?
It's Unimon.
Of course.
Yeah.
Unimon.
No, that's nothing.
How do you spell that?
Yeah, that's nothing. UNIMON. That's
nothing. You want to see? Hold on.
Look up fucking Angewomon, right?
Like, I know. I'm doing Demiwomon.
Oh, the fucking Lady Devimon.
This
yeah.
Horse, I don't approve.
Yeah, no. Nobody approves of the horse. That's not how this works.
I don't like that at all.
Yeah. But anyway, Digimon designs are all like cool, weird dinosaur creatures thought up by a 13-year-old deeply horny, like women in costumes also thought up by 13-year-olds.
I don't know, man. I don't know, dude. Cool is kind of fucking stretching it.
Not Unimon, but like Gilmon is just a little buddy. I don't know what to tell you.
It's a huge link, but it, yeah.
Yeah. But but anyway, so like I said, I played a little of the original Digimon World, and I had a great time. Messy and janky as that old game is, so I was like, well, let me try playing some of the others, because I actually managed to get through to the end of the story of Digimon World 1 in like pretty good time not being at work. So then I booted up Digimon World 2, and it's fucking just one of the worst, immediately trash. Nope. Digimon World 3, bad. Digimon World 4, one of the worst fucking games I've ever played. Made it to Digimon World Next Order, which is the one that's on like PS4 and Switch and PC. And like, that's back to being pretty cool again. If like a janky $0 budget, like Bandai Namco, please put more than a couple $100 towards the development of your licensed games. But yeah, like I really found myself getting back into like the nostalgia of being into Digimon when I was younger. And like Digimon World Next Order is like a pretty decent time if you can get it affordably.
Digimon is like Walmart Pokemon, right?
It's different. Thing. It's very different.
Here's the thing. Pokemon excels at video games. Digimon excels in the anime.
I will say, like, the original Digimon show, like, it's not a thing that I could really watch now, right?
Yeah.
But, like, that original show is, like, really fucking good. It was way better than anything Pokemon had ever done. And, like, Digimon is still occasionally getting, like, new movies that follow up some of the old stuff that are, like, really, really good and grapple with, like, really interesting themes. Like, Digimon grew up in a way Pokemon didn't.
Right.
And
I could tell the aftermath of like everything that happens, whereas Ash has just been the same age for like 20 years.
Yeah.
Like these kids like grow up and they're like, wow, we like saved the world and went to another dimension. And now we just got to pretend like life's.
Yeah. And now we're like in college and drifting apart and, you know.
No, I totally get it. Like looking at some of these Digimon designs, I can tell that this is both very serious and mature audience who values.
Yeah.
The deepest of lore and emotional.
John, I want you to look up Rosemon.
Rosemon.
Just Google Rosemon.
Rosemon?
Yeah. Just Google Rosemon.
Rosemon.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm assuming Digimon stands for digital monsters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, if Rosemon. You listen to the theme song, you would never forget what Digimon means.
Digimon, digital monsters, Digimon are the champions.
Literally the only lyric to the entire song.
This is way too horny.
I told you, all Digimon designs are either like cool little critters thought up by a 13-year-old that are genuinely kind of like, fuck yeah, or they're ladies in costumes.
Yeah.
But no, like, I'm so anyway, I've been like re-Digimon-pilled. a little bit.
I Googled Rosemond and it says safe search blurring is
on. That's for the best, bud. Yeah, Googling like most female identifying Digimon or like that female presenting Digimon is a bad choice, bud.
Digimon Smasher Path.
You can be all of like maybe only 15% humanoid and there's still people drawing the fan art out there.
Like I'm not kidding you.
Digimon was a gateway to furries.
Is on. Now if I turn it off, I see one thing that's blurred out. It says it's from DeviantArt. So
Look, I love Digimon. I do.
Let's turn off the blurring and see what happens. I wish I hadn't done that.
I but like that's the thing, is like I've come back to it's just a series I haven't thought about in forever, right? I liked it as a kid. I've never gone back to it as an adult, really. And I'm finding myself like back in like, wow, I really did like those first couple shows and some of the early games, and Next Order is really good. I'm not as hot. I did play Digimon Story Cyber Sleuth like a year or two ago, and that's the one everyone says is like the genuinely good one. I think it's fine. I am excited, apparently.
Is
like,
it compared to Pokemon? I mean, Digimon, like, video game standards, though?
Right. Well, again, problem is they're all cheap as shit, right? Because Namco does not put money into these games. But apparently there's, like, a, you know what? They just put out another, like, big movie that was really well-received. And it's like, do I gotta watch some of these, like, the Digimon kids are grown-up movies now and, like, rediscover my love for this? I think it's time. I think
I'll do it with you. Let's fucking go.
Yeah, I think we do. I think I need to. I guess you got to do the try movies and then the Last Evolution and then the one that just came out. It'll be a while before it's on the web anywhere. But yeah, and apparently they're gonna announce some more shit coming up
is
here.
Is Digimon as popular as Pokemon?
No, because nothing's as popular as Pokemon, right? But
like it was very much designed to kind of catch a little bit of that fire.
The original,
right?
The
Digimon
original
came out first.
Mm-hmm.
Really,
Digimon the original Digimon first. they were like Tamagotchi style things, right? They were a like, you know, virtual pet toy like a Tamagotchi that you
so
like
Pokemon
raised
came
in
battle. And basically Fortnited them like what happened to.
It's different again. Digimon was inspired by Tamagotchi. Pokemon was inspired by Final Fantasy or not Final Fantasy. Dragon Quest V.
I was gonna say wait.
Yeah, inspired by Dragon Quest V. I think Digimon got its card game before Pokemon did. They were very, very different approaches to being a cartoon, where the Pokemon cartoon was very, very, like, much cheesier than the oftentimes much heavier, like, Digimon stuff. Digimon has not been nearly as ever-present as Pokemon, right? There's new Pokemon shit every single year forever, and Digimon, like, takes little breaks, but it's never gone all the way away. It's stayed relatively popular. I just tuned out because, you know, I don't know. It wasn't...
Hey, I just want to say, two of my it's nice to have two of my favorite people in chat, Sam, who works for Square Enix, and Brad. Brad, what's up, man? I just wanted to shout out two of my
speaking of Sam, agreed, bring Monster Rancher back. Like, you know, that's Tecmo, right? Tecmo, come on. Let's get on this shit.
I mean, if we want to talk, do we want to talk about franchises to come back? Because we'll go all night.
We can do that, but that's, we got some topics to actually get into. But but yeah, that's what I, the other thing I played other than a bunch of Digimon games is I did play a shitload of Dave the Diver. I finally tried it. Very, very
noted
cool
indie game. Noted
very
indie
fun.
Game,
it's not an indie game, and I don't think anyone can play it.
I know that, Derek.
I know.
I'm being ironic.
I'm just making reference to, but like Dave the Diver, I don't think anyone can play it and think it's an indie game, right? Because there's just so much money in this fucking game, and just because it aesthetically looks like pixel art and lower quality, you know, models, but then you play it and the sheer amount of content and polish and like different kinds of games, this is like a farming simulator, a restaurant management sim, you know, like all these different games crammed in one. It's just not, this is not doable without more money than any indie dev would ever be able to get, and it's just immediately recognizable. But divorced from that annoying conversation, Dave the Diver is really cool. It's really fun. I like it. It satisfies a lot of the same things I love about playing games like SteamWorld Dig, you know?
Why is Finn in chat but not in the call?
Well, he's on vacation currently.
Content creation never takes
he's
a vacation.
He's at Disney. Sure. He's at Disney World.
Disney.
He did Disney World. Nathan.
Whatever. I will accept no excuses.
He had Disney World with his family and his janked up foot.
We're his family too.
Buddy, we are not his family to the same degree. No, none of us are his child.
I mean, Finn, we love you. We wish you were here.
None of us give him the kisses.
You should be here, but you're not. At any rate, I will go next because I will be relatively quick. I have been, Britt, I have been grinding to level up my Island Sanctuary in Final Fantasy XIV because I really want the, it's essentially the inventor glamour from Octopath Traveler 2. I'm at level 10. I need to get to level 15. It's actually not that bad. It's just lengthy, right? Because like a lot of the stuff takes like 11 to 12 real time hours.
Vibe. Wait. Like you just need to like drink, get high, something, and just like go to town. It's really calming. It just takes a long fucking time.
It does, but I've also had a really good time doing it.
Yeah.
You know, I've had
it's
a
not
really
a bad
good...
time. It's just like,
no.
I'm like, okay, I want my shit.
No,
I'm
not
patient.
At all. And especially like now that I've got my Zeramis extreme clear, like I've kind of, you know, I'm not one of these people who does like, you know, the ultimate raids. I'll do like,
you're
know,
not
the
an end game, bro.
I'll do the extreme trials and the savage raids, but I don't do like the ultimate stuff is beyond me. Like that's the stuff that you need to study with your static group for weeks. But now that I got my Zeramis EX clear, and I got the weapon too, for the past week, I've just been diving into Island Sanctuary and it has been very, very calming. I've got some chocobos in my little, animal pen. I got some sheep. I've got some axe beaks. I got some big muscular cows that are making me a lot of milk and cheese.
Oh, so big muscular horses, bad. Big muscular cows, great.
Yes, because they're actually providing a service, Derek. Big muscular horse isn't doing shit.
Hey, big muscular horse ate meat and killed goblins. So that's worth a lot to me.
Also, I have had a very good time. Britt, I got to tell you, there is nothing more zen than just like putting on a 3 or 4 hour podcast, like on your phone or something, and just going around and harvesting materials around the island. Like it's amazing how quickly time actually flies.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm 5 levels away and I'm grinding towards that glamour. After I get it, I will have to take a nice little break from Island Sanctuary, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah. The other thing I've been doing is now that finally Analog Pocket OS 2.0 has dropped, and with it comes the ability to add filters and display modes for ROMs. If you haven't seen me screaming about that on Twitter.
No.
And there is a CRT Trinitron filter that looks absolutely phenomenal with heavy scan lines on specifically Super Nintendo games. And with my analog dock, I'm throwing it up on my 90-inch television in the basement, and it is absolutely immaculate. And I've been playing Treasure of the Rudras, which is, yeah, or replaying it, which is, I first played this a couple of years ago. It is the final game developed by Squaresoft at the time for the Super Nintendo. This was the last one that came out. And it's a turn-based RPG that at first glance looks very much like Final Fantasy, but it's also got a lot of Live Alive's DNA in that you focus on multiple characters across 3 different parties. And at the end, or it's actually more like Octopath Traveler, really. And at the end, they all come together to Finn and Chet. Jesus, Finn. Yeah, like Brad was like, you know, Brad and Chet says, I don't like most filters, but that CRT one looks incredible. Like it truly does. Whether it's docked or undocked, the CRT Trinitron filter, like, here's the thing. Analog is a very irritating fucking company to have to deal with. But on this shit, on the actual tech, they don't miss. Analog does not miss. So Treasure of the Rudras, the unique thing, and I personally think this is, this or Bahamut Lagoon is going to be the next big HD 2D remake we get. Both games that never came out here, just like Live Alive. But the big thing about Treasure of the Rudras is the mantra system. Now, Treasure of the Rudras is interesting in that it draws very heavily from the Bhagavad Gita, which is the Hindu Bible, essentially. And it explores the concept of a Rudra, which is deeply rooted in Hindu lore. And the Rudra is a destroyer, basically. And at the start of the game, you have 15 days until the world ends, right? Until the Rudra comes and destroys the world and starts the world over again. If you couldn't tell, not just from, you know, terms like the Rudra, but mantras are your spells. You have enemies like, you know, Bajras and, you know, like, you know, it's very, very, very steeped in Hinduism. But the mantras, you don't learn spells. You just inscribe words and see what, and you can see what happens. And you can play around with it. There is a well-known ultimate spell if you just type in banana god, it is like the word banana god will flash across the screen and it's like 9999 damage. You essentially create your own spells. So this game was very much ahead of its time. But Treasure of the Rudras, I'm about halfway through. Treasure of the Rudras is a forgotten gem that really more people need to play. It's one of the best SNES era games that never came over here. And that's what I got. That's what I'm playing right
now.
Nice. Britt.
I want to go last. Sam, you go next.
I want to go last. Sam.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, I've been playing a couple of games over my break, sort of like with work, sort of slowing down a little bit ahead of the new year. And I've been getting to two games that different people have been bugging me to play. The first one is Signalis, which Justin,
I'm so happy you're playing that.
So this one's my bad. I should not have taken this one to get it, despite being
right?
crunched to pieces on work. Signalis is excellent. Signalis is absolutely excellent. It is a throwback to, if anyone here somehow doesn't know, it's a throwback to like old survival horror, very, very, very heavily inspired by the original Resident Evil.
This game would be right at home on a PlayStation 1.
Yeah. It's a PS1 horror game in the modern day. And
extremely,
I love it.
Extremely. Don't want to say too much because there's a lot of mystery in it. But, you know, you arrive at this abandoned facility. It's very clear that things have gone horribly wrong. Incredible pixel art. Just my God, the art direction is stellar. The fact that this was made by, I think, just two or three people is incredible. My one complaint is that the inventory limit of just six items is
too limited.
Really restricting. It's not so bad early on. The first couple of hours, it's kind of fine. I'm really into the meat of it now. I think I'm like at the 2/3 mark or something.
It's like a 9-hour game, I think.
I'm like 6-7 hours in, something like that. And now it's like, okay, there are doors that take six keys to open or five keys to open. Each key takes up an inventory slot. All right, this is a little excessive. But I get what they're doing. Ultimately, what they're trying to do is they're trying to force you to figure out your runs. Like, okay, am I going to go here and here and here and then go to this safe room? Or do I want to grab this item and try to get this? I have this, but I don't know where it goes. It's that sort of thing. Go play Signalis.
There's a lot of Silent Hill DNA here too.
There's definitely some.
Especially in the save system, when like you, that sound effect and the screen grows red, I was like, oh, this is Silent Hill. But Sam, if I could, if you could just mention the sound design in Signalis.
It takes a lot to scare me. I am very jaded when it comes to horror. I just consume so much horror, shows, movies, games, whatever. And there are some hallways where it is actually unnerving, where I'm like, I'm not sure if I want to continue walking down here because of the different, like, you hear things clattering around out there. Yep. And normally, I don't pay too much attention to footstep audio. It's one of those things that's like, it's cool, and then you sort of tune it out, right? You put it in the back of your brain and it's not mandatory processing. Here it really stands out, because if you choose to run and your character normally just walks very slowly through rooms, it makes a lot of noise, and that noise attracts enemies, and it is some amazing attention to detail.
Are you playing with any of the filters?
Oh no,
through standard right now, but I am going to go through, like, again, this is definitely a game I'm going to replay, and I'm going to play around with it.
Apologies, everybody. I dropped for like 5 seconds, 10 seconds. I'm not sure what happened, but
no worries. Discord going.
Sorry, hey, we've been doing this for how many years, and this is the first time I've dropped out of a call briefly. Very weird.
No worries.
Yeah.
No worries. So yeah, I don't want to say too much about the specifics of story or anything, or like exactly what it is you find in this abandoned facility, but place acknowledged. Some excellent puzzles.
You don't find survival. Anything good.
No, it ain't good. It ain't good. The other game I've been playing that my brother has been like really bugging me to play that I didn't get to check out earlier this year is Lies of P.
Oh yeah.
I keep meaning to play this, Sam.
You need to, John.
Okay, here's what I'll say. This is the one.
This is the only Souls-like that feels...
the fabled like Souls game that actually is as good as a Souls game?
Yes. If you slapped a From Software logo on the front, I would believe wholeheartedly with no issues that this was made by From Software.
Yes.
It feels like Bloodborne. Like that it just does.
I don't know. I think it's just got FromSoft's like attention to detail, like the quality of combat, the amount of content, the like number of mechanics, the weapon crafting system is super interesting. They like place enemies with real purpose for how they work to create encounters in the level.
Yeah, there's actual thought in the level design, how the levels loop back. Like, you're not just marching down endless corridors like you are in some of these games. You have, like, I'll find a shortcut in a lift that takes me back all the way to the beginning. And, you know, so I have an easier route to the boss or stuff like that. And also, I'll say this. It kind of got joked on and memed on, and I definitely played a part in that with the whole, like, it's dark Pinocchio setting.
So did I, dude. Like, dude, I think everybody
They
did.
Make it yeah, work, though, dude.
Like, oh, it's Pinocchio sword, huh?
The setting works. It's good. They do some interesting twists to the point that, like, I couldn't believe this, but I was actually excited when I saw different characters wearing animal masks, and it's like, I know who you are.
Is Monstro the sperm whale there?
I haven't finished it. I don't know.
I think you should play Lies of P, John. I think you just should.
Yeah, but John, you would like Lies of P.
As a Dark Souls respecter, yeah, this is like the one.
Dark Souls lover. Yeah. Like,
I think the game is divided into 11 chapters is what I read somewhere. And I'm like midway through chapter 7. So yeah, unless it drops off a cliff somehow.
It doesn't. It doesn't.
Yeah, Lies of P is excellent. Lies of P is really, really good.
And Sam, you got anything else?
Nothing else that I'm actively playing right now. I finished the Valhalla DLC. I think I mentioned that the last time I was on here. Go play that. Like,
yeah, I've heard it's surprisingly story.
I need to. I haven't touched it yet.
I can't say anything about it that I haven't said before, but it's great.
I need to.
It's very, very good. There's a couple of other things I'm hoping to play over the continued winter break. I want to go through Pentiment again because that has good moody religious vibes that are perfect for a dour winter and sort of self-examination, you know. That's what I've been playing so far.
I also want to give a special shout out to Dan Wizenhunt in chat. He is one of our earliest listeners. And I just want to say that it's always good to see him there. Britt. One, you look absolutely lovely tonight, and two, what have you been playing?
So I haven't really been playing anything.
Fake gamer, get off the podcast.
I've been dabbling, but I can't, like... So I posted on Twitter that I got VSG surgery, which is basically a sleeve in my stomach. And if y'all are thinking about doing this... Don't do it around Christmas time when there's like candy and cake.
Oh, no.
I wasn't going to say anything.
Bread and like you can't drink. Like I have been in the deepest depression in a while this whole past week to the point where I've just been like potatoing on the couch because I just don't have any motivation to get up and play anything. I started Super Mario RPG. I had planned on like playing that while I was recovering and just didn't do that. I started Alan Wake 2. I beat Alan Wake Remastered. I don't think I've been on here since I've said that.
I thought you'd already finished Alan Wake 2.
No. I did the remaster. I beat
Yeah,
Remastered Alan Wake, where I talked about how dog shit the fucking combat is in that game.
It's so bad.
It just gets worse. And like the more you play the game, the more you just don't want to anymore.
Alan Wake itself, phenomenal game.
Phenomenal.
Dog shit combat.
Driving. It's dog shit.
I just forget the driving sections. I'm going to be real with you.
Brit, CJ like, says Alan Wake is bad Luigi's Mansion. Great story, great atmosphere.
Combat sucks. Yeah. So I sped around that because I've been wanting to, play Alan Wake 2 because I really love the games. Like, I love Control and everything. So I started playing that and I thought I was doing really good. And then I asked our Gaming Central chat how long the game was, and they were like, oh, it has like 16 chapters, and I was like, yeah, I'm not as far as I thought I was. So that kind of like deflated me. I thought I was doing so good. You have no idea. Alan Wake has like what, 6 chapters, 7, 8 with the DLC, whatever. So I was like, I was on 4 fucking riding the world. I'm like, hell yes, I'm doing it. I'm making it in. And then it was just like, yeah, you got a while to go. I was like, oh.
Alan Wake 2's a long game. Yeah.
Okay. It's much meatier than you'd think.
Yeah. But I love it. It's, yes. I know I'm not going to finish it in the next few days, and it's just, a good game. I've been playing Overwatch.
Good comfort game.
It is, but it's also not, because fuck Blizzard and their fucking.
Yeah. So hold on.
We're going to talk a little about
Overwatch
2,
right? Like, that's you.
Well, yeah, you can't play Overwatch 1 anymore.
You can't play Overwatch
1. Okay, all right. Okay. I wanted to. So, like, I wasn't sure on that one because I don't play Overwatch. So.
Yeah. So I've been playing Overwatch 2, and it's not that the game isn't fun, because it is. Sometimes.
I mean, it's just Overwatch, right?
Like, it's just Overwatch, and it's like, it's. Like, what I love about it is the diversity of the game. Like, it's not just a straight shooter. Like, you can choose, like, whatever you want to be. Mm-hmm. It's the fucking greed of Blizzard that is just, like, y'all are just the worst. And I know we're going to talk about Blizzard later, so I'm going to specifically limit this to just Overwatch. But they are charging, like, $20 for a skin. And calling it something else when it's just like a recolor of a skin they already have in a game. What? And they're charging you $20 fucking dollars for it. Yeah.
The monetization's insane, dude.
The cute, like, little Mercy skin that's been going around with her reindeer ears and her sweater dress.
Yeah.
$25 fucking dollars to get that shit. And there's a battle pass. So in addition to $15 battle pass, they want you to spend like $50 in skins. And I think it works for Fortnite. Because I think customizing your characters just it makes it more personal to you. Whereas like Overwatch is just like, you're playing dress up, you know, like how do you, it just sucks because you know that Overwatch 2 failed because they wanted to monetize Overwatch. And like, it's like clearly like, they've released some game types where you can clearly see like this was going to be part of their story game, and
which is not happening.
No, which isn't happening anymore. And that's what's frustrating about it is they completely sold out. You know, they sold us the idea of like, oh, this is going to be a PvE game. It's going to be so good. That's why we're switching to Overwatch 2 from Overwatch 1. And the whole thing was just a fucking money grab. It was like they just like monetized the entire fucking game. And it sucks, and I don't want to support something like that. And it's just shitty.
Brit, as someone who, like, I played Overwatch for, like, an hour when it came out, I'm not going to sit here and say that the game is dead. It's not dead. But it's basically like a shell of its former self, right?
Right, and like, it's not dead, but it's also not relevant anymore as far as like in the competitive, like Overwatch League is over.
You guys remember when this shit was the biggest fucking thing going? Yeah.
It's like, one of the biggest bag fumbles I've ever seen. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. They canceled an in development like graphic novel, right, that they were going to do. They repeatedly shot down the idea that they were ever going to do like an animated series when everybody was asking for it. And then, yeah, they finally announce Overwatch 2, and what we got is
0%. It was like a wet part of an announcement too, right? There was like,
no, the original Overwatch 2 was really had people hyped up because it was, hey, we're finally going to get into story shit.
Yeah, that's, PvE.
Yeah, we're finally going to get into...
I meant like the actual announcement itself. It's just like, hey, we're working on Overwatch 2.
No, it was like a big trailer.
A big trailer at BlizzCon and everything. Okay.
It's a big story-oriented trailer, and they like did a, like they talked about all this cool stuff they were going to do. And yeah,
and they went over their designs, like character like changes.
Yeah. They showed like through, fucking like, skill, like upgrade screens and shit. And yeah, by the time and then they went radio silent for ages. And then they finally were just like, yeah, it's just going to be a free to play update version. But the paid scenario, like campaign like, will come later. And then it,
like,
they
seriously, canceled. Like what happened to this fucking game? Like what
Bobby Kotick happened to this game? Bobby Kotick single-handedly happened to this game.
Jeff Kaplan was like,
and Kaplan probably left because of Bobby Kotick. Like,
yeah, and well, that and just like they probably told him like, yeah, we're not actually going to make this a story game, and he was like, fuck this. Yeah.
Like, I think genuinely, like first off, I mean, look, I say Bobby Kotick. Bobby Kotick is the highest person on that chain, but like a shitload of senior people at Blizzard.
Bobby Kotick, like all the people around him.
Actually, in this particular case, it is singular.
We did well, okay, like, but also Blizzard lost, and like the Overwatch team lost a lot of key talent. Because it turned out that a bunch of them were like monsters like those people were like rightfully gotten rid of, but like, yeah, we've heard from people who worked on Overwatch that like Kotick basically jerked that team around left and right and forced them to focus on this shitty battle pass laden, like overly monetized thing to the point where they no longer had time to work on the campaign stuff. So yeah, it's all Kotick single-handedly, pretty much.
So speaking of Bobby Kotick, now, and we'll kind of transition our
we can talk about this briefly. There's not a ton, but it's good to bring this up while we've got Sam here.
So. But I do want to very quickly bring my son into this, and son, come here.
Real podcaster move.
Oh, he's there. I was like, where is he in chat?
If you could just tell the people what you think of Bobby Kotick.
Does he know who Bobby Kotick is?
Yeah, see, there you go. I just told him.
John, do you still have that Blu-ray copy of Moneyball starring Activision Blizzard former CEO Bobby Kotick? But yeah, speaking of Bobby Kotick, Ding Dong, the witch is dead.
He's gone.
As of tomorrow,
yeah, precise. Yes. It's the 28th.
Recording today on the 28th.
We were hoping, right, when Microsoft.
I think we were all like, for me, look, I'm somebody who has a lot of reservations about Microsoft buying Activision Blizzard, right?
Oh,
I see it as a big, complicated, messy thing that I had a lot of worries about. But for me, the silver lining was always I didn't see a world where Bobby Kotick survived that merger, right? And
I mean, he's going to be fine, unfortunately.
Well, right. But like, when you have that much money and power, there's nothing I can do to you. Like, he's immune to all consequences and he will die rich and powerful.
Unfortunately.
Yes. Bobby Kotick is going to die rich and powerful and unknowing of any real consequence, just like Donald Trump will. Like, that's just how America works. But at the very least, him being gone from Activision Blizzard means he can no longer personally ruin the lives of so many people who worked for him at Activision Blizzard. If he never gets another CEO job in the gaming industry, and I can't think of many places that would take him at this point, that's like people he can no longer hurt, you know? So like, that's good. And also like, there's a lot of good at Activision Blizzard. Right. There's a lot of good like teams and people working there and a lot of good like beloved franchises that exist there. And all of that has stagnated under Bobby Kotick. So Kotick being gone is like, OK, well, whoever ends up taking his place permanently may not necessarily like we have no clue. But it is at least an opportunity for change. Which is something that Activision Blizzard has not seen for 20 plus years. How long has Kotick been CEO of Activision?
I mean, I honestly don't remember a time when he wasn't in charge.
Yeah.
So this is like a huge sea change for a major part of the industry, because Activision Blizzard is one of the biggest dev slash publishers in the game. And so like, you know, this is kind of like a proverbial rocking of the boat that we haven't seen in a very long time. I mean, putting the purchase of Activision Blizzard aside for a moment, this on its own is
1991, 32 years.
That's a really long time. That's a really long fucking time, Derek.
Yeah.
We don't need to waste any more breath on that guy. I just wanted to
have some questions for Sam though. As resident Microsoft expert and actual goddamn journalist. So we got word that in the meantime, we don't know for how long, Matt Booty is now in charge of Activision Blizzard. I don't think that's terribly like a surprise, because he was just recently put in charge of like Xbox gaming as a division, correct?
Yeah, so it was sort of reorganized, because originally it was just, okay, I have to back up. When they acquired ZeniMax, they didn't change anything. And ZeniMax was privately held. I'm not getting into that debate with anyone or discussion, but like, they didn't change anything because they were a giant privately held company. There was not as much nonsense that happens when you are a publicly traded company with public shareholders. And so after a couple of different things that have happened, they've wanted to integrate them a little more, not take away their identity or anything, but they've wanted to like give them people to report to and share ideas and have some more accountability. So they put them alongside XGS, Xbox Game Studios, like Obsidian,
right,
and et cetera, and they put them under Matt Booty. Now what has happened is they put Activision Blizzard under there as well, and they've taken away Kotick. And while Kotick is the headline, he's definitely like the eye-catching title in this, it's worth pointing out it's not just him. Most of the C-suite is going over the next 2 months.
Just not all at once, because you can't just get rid of an entire suite of executives.
No. Like, I think the communications officer, Maservi, she's going late January. She has to transfer her team over to Kari Perez, who is the head of communications at Xbox. Like, that stuff takes a very long time.
Is Ibarra leaving? Do we know yet?
Ibarra is in charge of Blizzard right now, and that's
going to be leaving
for now. I don't remember who's in charge of King and Activision Publishing, aka Call of Duty, but they're going to remain in place for now. So there's a
probably lower priority than the C-suite for now.
The C-suite is getting cleaned out. I think the CFO is staying, which makes sense, but otherwise, because they need someone to handle their own number crunching.
Yeah,
but
right.
Otherwise, they're all going to
the
be...
The CFO has no involvement in fucking games. They're, you know...
The CFO makes the numbers work for Call of Duty.
Yeah. Right.
So
basically,
So what is, I guess, your main question about how this unfolds from here on out?
Here is my question. Because right now, while like Bethesda is overseen by Matt Booty in the same way Xbox Game Studios is overseen by Matt Booty, like Bethesda has its own internal leadership kind of still and its own department heads. Right now, with Bobby Kotick gone, the Activision Blizzard side of things, and of course the C-suite being, gradually phased out, does not have that same like upper middle level in terms of somebody who is between the Mike Ibarra and the Matt Booty. And do you think that that it stays that way, right? That somebody like Mike Ibarra, whoever eventually replaces him, that the people over Activision Publishing and King just continue to report directly to Booty? Or do we think that there ends up being a general manager over those branches?
So that's an interesting question. The short answer is I think they want to wait and see. Okay. I think, because the thing about it is, and that's another part of the absurdity of how big they are and everything going on there, Activision, Blizzard, King is literally three different publishers. Mm-hmm. Activision, Blizzard, and King all have their own PR people. I've worked with most of them. Like, they all have their own different, you know, people who handle most things. And that's why the ABK like C-suite is being dissolved. I think they just want to wait and see if that's even necessary. If they even need a, I am not convinced, based on the very limited conversations I've had with some of Xbox leadership, that there needs to be a replacement for Kotick at all.
Well, because all Kotick did, to be clear, is interfere. So just getting rid of the interference is better.
Exactly. And if you're not having to deal with shareholders as a company, if like that's Microsoft's concern, well above everyone else in the gaming team now, if that's not necessary, maybe it's best to just let the game teams make games uninterrupted.
Let Blizzard be treated, instead of it being Activision Blizzard King as a sub piece of the umbrella, each of them kind of divorces a little bit and becomes their own.
Exactly. Like, it's not going, I think we'll see, but I do not think it's going to be it's not going to be like Xbox and Bethesda over here and then Activision Blizzard King over here. I think it's going to be more like five separate labels.
Gotcha.
If that makes any sense at all.
Do you think that that ends up being, this is almost certainly a yes, but like, do you think that ends up being better for Activision and Blizzard in particular?
Probably.
To be broken apart from each other?
Probably, because you have the nonsense that's happened with, I mean, we just talked about it with Kotick and Overwatch 2 and everything that's happened there, but also a big part of the culture problem that Blizzard has had is this idea that Blizzard needed to change how it worked in order to like make different kinds of games, make more games, make games more frequently, update games more frequently that weren't named World of Warcraft, and so on. Now, I'm not going to say there isn't some truth to the idea that maybe Blizzard could make more games. I actually think there are some fair points to be made.
Or at the very
there,
least, fucking partner with some other studios to help get games made using their licenses.
Right. But just to give one example, if a team of like 100 people or something, because Blizzard is 5,000 people, want to work on something related to StarCraft, they don't have to justify it to investors anymore.
Yeah.
They don't have to justify it.
You just said Blizzard is 5,000 people, and they do not release nearly enough for that to make sense to me.
That's full time, to be clear. Activision Publishing is 3,000. King is 2,000. Blizzard is 5,000. That's full time staff contractors.
Right.
Inflates that number.
Right. But like, you think about how Final Fantasy 16 was a team of like what, like 200-ish people?
They had support from Platinum, but
support from external. I mean, you're talking about a couple hundred, right? And that's for like one of the biggest and most expensive games put out this year. Right,
guys. Have I told you about how much I love Final Fantasy 16?
All the time, bud. But like, it's just wild to me to think that Blizzard's 5,000 people and games cannot be put out. Right, the only things that come out are giant, you know, horribly inflated service games, and it's like they should be able to throw out a few smaller projects.
There's room for experimentation, and there's room for growth, and I think they can wait and see like some of that blossoming here.
Yeah.
Which, to be clear, is going to take a long amount of time. I've seen some people talking about, like, why isn't this happening or why isn't that happening? They can't even legally work with the unions yet.
That was going to be my next question, was how do you think that all of the union is... How do you think that all of the, like, burgeoning unionization in Activision Blizzard, you know, maybe kind of changes the game when it comes to how these studios are grouped together and how they interact?
Sure. So how do I put this politely? Cynicism is not undeserved when it comes to these kinds of things.
Microsoft is traditionally not very pro-union. So this has been kind of, you know, to see them.
You want to talk about a sea change. This is a very big sea change. There was definitely an element, I think, not undeserved among some of my peers of like, OK, we'll see how long this lasts. But the thing is, I've talked to some of the people who are unionizing, like some of the testers at id Software. I had a chance to talk with some of them. And then also more recently, some of the people like on the Xbox Quality Assurance team who are not unionized, but like, you know, there's rumblings out there. They're talking. And the thing is, they seem to actually mean it. And things seem to actually be going well. I think 77, was it 77? I need to go look it up. But 77 Starfield testers who were temporary workers just got hired. Most of them got full-time jobs. A handful got like temporary contract extensions, but all of them were recently accepted into the like the full-time union, the ZeniMax Workers United, which is going really well. So there are a lot of reasons to be positive about the direction this is going. The union has shown a lot of good work, the ZeniMax union, to be clear, about like getting things fully remote. ZeniMax is fully remote. They have kept that. They're one of the only publishers, I think, that has kept that specifically.
Blizzard weirdly found some of their best success in the times when they were allowing people to remain remote.
the Dragonflight, that was going to lead into my next point. The Dragonflight expansion, Diablo 4 actually coming together. There were other factors there, of course. Yeah. Like, stuff like that came and happened while Blizzard was working remotely. So I don't, like, I understand it's frustrating in the here and now that there's some nonsense about, like, oh, well, the company's mandating going back. I think we need to wait and see how conversations with the union representatives play out, because there's going to be a lot of moving parts there and a lot of things can change very rapidly.
Yeah.
And if it can work out, and I'm very positive it can, if you're talking about Blizzard being unionized, Activision being unionized, King being unionized, ZeniMax being unionized, that is a massive chunk of the industry that sets a very big standard for others to either follow or miss out on QA when people are looking at the road ahead.
Yeah.
So I am very hopeful there, based on all the conversations I've had.
It's nice to have, like, reasons to be hopeful about this fucking, like, Microsoft Activision Blizzard merger stuff that we've been talking about for, it feels like, a decade now.
Oh,
and it hasn't been that long, but it feels like we were getting
23 months.
Jesus.
Yeah. January 18, 2022 is when things
wow
began.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, it has felt like an eternity that we've been talking about this. And, like, now that it has finally, like, officially gone through and changes are being made, it is at least nice to see both that unionization efforts are, as far as we can tell, being allowed unimpeded, and that the biggest problem in the company is gone. Maybe, like, I cannot stress enough, there may not be a more evil man than Bobby Kotick in the entire gaming industry. I'm not sure if that's...
I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah,
I'm
struggling.
Not with the influence and power that he has.
Right. This
not
man...
Not with the influence and power that he has. I can think of one person who is more evil. And his name is Andrian.
Well, yeah, I mean, but that's the thing, is there's a lot of Andrians, right? There's a lot of folks like that. There were a lot of them at Ubisoft. There were a lot of them at Blizzard, right? Like, you know, but thankfully the ones that we know of have been taken care of. So, but yeah, it was just nice to have some, like, good news for once, I think, about Microsoft and Activision Blizzard. If nobody else has anything to say about...
No, I got nothing else on... I got nothing on that one.
Kotick eating shit.
Yeah.
Au revoir. Goodbye. Good riddance.
I do have one question, and this is kind of just like a what you guys think. What do you guys think this is going to be for the state of, like, the games that we just talked about, as well as, like, Overwatch 2? Like,
I feel like Overwatch 2's fucked, right? I don't know that you can repair Overwatch 2. But my genuine hope... is that Blizzard, the fact that Blizzard, like, even with Mike Ibarra in charge, right? Ibarra now reports to Matt Booty, now reports to Microsoft, not to Bobby Kotick. So, like, that's a different direction. Microsoft has shown they're willing to put money and time into single-player experiences, into making sure multiplayer experiences are correct. Like, Microsoft's in a very different place than they were last generation. You know, I think, and my hope, is that eventually we see, like, Overwatch 2 might be fucked, but there might be more Overwatch stuff to come under Microsoft that maybe didn't get a chance to exist under Activision.
I got one for you. I got one for you, Derek.
Yeah.
World of Warcraft coming to Xbox.
Oh, I don't know, man. Maybe.
If no, Final Fantasy 14 can be a console RPG.
FF14 was
RPG.
Built for consoles too, though. So, like, I don't play World of Warcraft. I don't know.
But definitely not. I think they're gonna make a new, like, World of Warcraft MMO, that is gonna be, like, more updated and stuff. Just based.
I think it's
on
finally time for a fresh start.
Yeah, I think they're gonna pull a 14 and just because 11 still exists. Like, Final Fantasy XI still runs, still has people playing, and they still get updates. Like, I still, to this day, get, like, weekly email updates about Final Fantasy XI, which I think is just fucking insane. But, yeah, so I think that's what they're going to do, is that they're just going to keep maintaining World of Warcraft, and I think they're going to make a new MMO that is going to be much higher graphics and just update it all around and get some...
How long has World of Warcraft been going now?
F- fuck, what?
2004?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Am I a year off? I might be a year off there, give or take.
So they're going to announce the new World of Warcraft game in 2024 then, right? 20 years?
They have some big plans right now that they're unfolding.
Yeah, they have huge plans.
The next saga, I would not expect. Yeah, 2004, I was correct. Okay, I thought so. I had to look it up. I would not expect anything different there. I know WoW was specifically designed around being a PC experience, but also they have added encouragement to figure things out. And also, I'll say this, Age of Empires, people said it could never be done. Age of Empires works on Xbox now, so.
Yeah. Oh, we'll speaking see. Of Age of Empires, we are getting StarCraft 3. Microsoft has shown that they're willing to keep occasionally giving a shot at the RTS genre, like, more than any other publisher.
Age of Mythology, my beloved remake, is coming.
So I truly think that StarCraft will see the light of day, made by a non-Blizzard studio. Maybe even partnering with Relic again, like they did with Age of Empires 4. You know, I could see that happening down the road.
StarCraft has a future now. Definitely, is what I'll say. Which was not the case.
Like
StarCraft MMO? Somebody mentioned in chat, like, maybe. World of StarCraft?
No. I feel like StarCraft, if you're going outside of strategy, I feel like StarCraft lends itself more to shooters than anything else.
Space of StarCraft?
I feel like they've kind of, like, built their, like, MMO base on WoW, so I think if it were to suddenly shift, not saying they couldn't, but I think a lot of people would be like,
why would you? Right.
Yeah, why?
Just make World of Warcraft 2. Immediately light the world on fire because you put a World of Warcraft 2 logo out there. Like,
right.
So.
Like, there's a lot of expansions coming out. They announced the next 3 expansions for WoW, and I think at the end of that last expansion is when
we'll finally see a refresh.
I will say this, though.
Will you say this, though?
Yeah, I will say this, though. If there is a World of Warcraft, I don't know, 2 happening at all, like, the fact that like Xbox is finally getting Final Fantasy 14 with Dawn Trail kind of makes me question that, because I'm not sure that they would want, at this point, if something like that was in the works, I'm not sure they would want a major competitor.
Yeah.
Well, it's not going to, like I said, they have 3 expansions coming before.
It's going to be a while. Yeah, but it's also be like a while. The thing is that, like, it's not any different from being on Windows, right? Like, there are people who play FF14 and there are people who play World of Warcraft. Like, putting them both on Xbox just gives
14 at this point is a bigger, it's the most populated MMORPG. It's surpassed.
Yeah,
World
but
of
man,
Warcraft, right?
It's not by as much as a lot of people think. World of Warcraft is huge.
It's really. It has a huge roleplay community. Like,
oh, yeah. For sure. Oh no, that I don't doubt at all. Like,
there
is
no world
is
in which Microsoft goes, "Hey, we own World of Warcraft now. We're making a theoretical World of Warcraft 2. We're not going to put that on Xbox consoles because of Final Fantasy 14." That just doesn't happen, right? Like, they're gonna. I agree with what Brit is saying, because I also trust Brit's expertise as somebody who knows more about WoW than me, that, like, that won't work on consoles. But if they're going to make a new one or a refresh or World of Warcraft or Realm Reborn, that thing's going to be, they're going to plan on making that thing.
It's going to be like a rocks falls, everybody dies, but, like, just that world dies. And
yeah. Matter of fact, that motherfucker will be on PlayStation. Like, watch. Yeah.
Right.
They want that money.
Right.
So.
So did we want to move on to the stuff happening to the gaming industry in China?
Yeah,
let's move on. We got a new contender for, like, one of the most important stories of the year, coming in at the last minute. So the Chinese government put out or announced new regulations over the gaming industry in China. Pretty much all of them relating to, like, gambling and monetization elements in games. So I cannot pull the article up right now because I'm you know, running the stream. So I'm going to run this off the top of my head. And Sam, please correct me if I get anything wrong or I miss anything. Mm-hmm. I know it is going to outlaw things like daily login bonuses for games, right? Which are a thing that is designed to make you constantly log into, like, free-to-play games in order, because, like, if you log in every day, then there's a chance that you will spend money that day, right? So, like, it's a Skinner box technique. So it's like, okay, well, we're going to outlaw this because it is psychologically, like, manipulative as an element. They are outlawing... shit. Sam, hit me. I'm already lost after the first one.
So I've got it. Okay. Sam, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, so some of the stuff, some of the stuff that you're seeing here, so publishers will be prohibited from offering loot boxes to miners, allowing for in-game items to be auctioned off, and also games will need to impose spending limits on players, and publishers will be required to run all their servers for Chinese games locally in China.
Fair. If I'm playing a game and I'm in China, like, I would want, like, the server to be where I'm at, right?
Right.
Right. But, like, you know, but this is also a form of control, right? It's a form of control by the Chinese government.
There's also one other big one, just to be clear, that then this is the kahuna, really, in my opinion, at least. And that is, if a game's servers shut down at any point, every dollar a player spent has to be refunded.
Yes, unspent currency is what I read. Not every dollar they spend.
Sorry. Yes. Yeah. Like any unspent currency.
Yeah, has to be returned to them in the amount that they paid for it originally, in the like form that they paid for it. So getting real, you know, real currency back. I'm also seeing that games with loot boxes must allow users to directly purchase specific items. So no more putting, the new waifu in the wedding dress behind like an ultra rare pull. She's got to be available in the shop for somebody to directly purchase.
It's also worth noting that after these new rules were announced, almost immediately, Tencent shares dropped as much as 16%, and NetEase shares were down 25% after these new rules were released.
Yeah,
and what
the Chinese gaming industry as a whole took massive losses that like immediately.
Yeah, I mean, holdings and all that stuff is always sort of weird, but they're saying it's about an $80 billion loss right now is the expectation.
Yeah, and so like. It's a very complicated situation. There are things Yeah, go ahead.
I will say, so I want to start on the nitty gritty, right? Which is just about every one of the things we named, I think is a good rule to have, right? It is a good rule to say.
Am I supposed to not like these
right,
things?
Right, exactly. I was joking before. It's kind of weird to say, like, wow, China made some fucking, like, based decisions here. Because while this issue is going to be a little more complicated, like, forcing the games to allow the direct purchase of the items you want instead of being able to hide it behind loot boxes and, like, 0.2% drop rates, which is designed to get the whales to buy box after box after box after box looking for that one ultra rare pull, right?
Yep.
Letting people directly buy it is an important thing. Letting people get refunds when a game shuts down so that their unspent money is returned to them is important. And actually it'll require these companies to keep ledgers, right? Of like, mm-hmm. you know, which is like kind of important data for these companies to have to hold on to. I think it is good to ban the sale of loot boxes to miners. I think it is good. I think the only thing on there that I think is like not immediately like incredible is blocking like daily login bonuses.
Yeah.
You know, is like a thing where that's not like an immediate evil to me. But
because you're still getting something, but they're trying to get you.
But
to,
I understand
like,
what it is. Cycle. They do that because they give you these paltry bullshit login bonuses to get you to keep logging in every day, you know, so that you will be invested in. Like it's all designed. All these gacha games are designed psychologically to extract like, as much money as possible from certain.
We can
folks.
All agree that this is like mostly targeting like the mobile gaming scene, right? Like,
yeah, well, and kind of the exploding, you know, you look at like the Hoyoverse, right, of like, you know, Genshin Hoyo Impact really, yeah, you know, started this trend, and you're seeing it more and more now of like PC and console games too that are built heavily on these mobile style like gacha elements and free to play mechanics, energy that runs out on a daily basis, etc. And like, frankly, a huge chunk of like the overwhelming majority of the Chinese gaming industry is built on those types of games.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, all the gacha game, and like for me, it's mostly mobile games. Like, there are so many like Final Fantasy, like Square mobile apps that, yeah, I just don't play because they're gacha like crap holes, and I refuse, right, to be a part of them.
And like, that's the thing is, right, like even games that are not Chinese made or like developed or published, right, still like a lot of these mobile games rely heavily on the Chinese market to yeah, make a lot of money, right? Because that's such a massive part of the gaming market in terms of dollars.
So I have a dissenting opinion here. And I want to like, I want to frame this properly because it's a complex subject.
I'm going to take whatever you say in the worst faith possible and cancel you, please, on Twitter tomorrow.
Absolutely. I mean, most people do. But in spirit, I agree with some of these things, but I've also seen a lot of cheerleading for the Chinese government online.
Never cheerlead governments, any of them. They're all bad.
And I want to temper people. Yes, they are making some choice. They are introducing some regulations on games that, on the face of it, look positive, but we also have to remember what kind of government we're talking about here. They're not doing this for any sort of altruistic reason. This is also a government that forbids the depiction of queer romances in games, that says that any game depicting a quote-unquote effeminate male will not be approved. Any game, hey,
have
that
they seen a lot of these mobile games, because
any game that,
right?
like they do not, they will not approve games where you can make moral choices or blurred moral boundaries. They say you can be, players can choose to be good or evil, but we don't think you should have this choice. If regulators, and this is a direct quote coming from the Chinese government, if regulators can't tell the character's gender immediately, the setting of the characters could be considered problematic and red flags will be raised. You also can't depict religion in a way that the Chinese government says could be taken as, controversial. So like, some of these changes are good, but at the same time, I don't like the
you're
messenger.
Nervous about anything like, that allows that is the Chinese government like flexing muscle over an industry.
It's not even that. No, it's really not that. It's precedent, right? And in today's world, precedent is everything.
Yeah, I see that.
And you know, it started with, you know, limiting the amount of time that people can play. Then it moved on to legitimate human rights issues, like, well, you can't, your games in China can't have queer romances, or your games in China can't depict whatever the hell, whatever amorphous thing an effeminate male means, right? Like, it's just some amorphous thing that people think of here. You can't choose to be good or evil in a game. Like you're going to make the choices that we want you to make. And what I don't want, and what I don't want to see is stuff like this being implemented worldwide.
Well, stuff like what? Right? Like,
well, it's all about precedent, right? So let's say that some of these things start taking, because here's the deal. Video games have no friends in the federal government. At the legislative level. And I'm thinking back into the 90s when people were like, oh, you know, Mortal Kombat is going to cause kids to kill each other, you know.
Fucking Jack Thompson. Remember that motherfucker?
Jack Thompson and fucking, you know, Joseph Lieberman, right? Like, those guys who were like, oh, it's all going downhill, man. They're all murder simulators. An elected body can trample a human being's rights just as effectively as a monarch can. And What I don't want to see is a precedent being set in the United States. Because once people, and the Supreme Court over and over has shot down attempts to regulate the video game industry at a federal level, but with a conservative majority, a strong conservative majority in the Supreme Court, that could go the way of the fucking dodo real fast. And once that snowball starts rolling downhill, it's just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. So on the face of it, I do think these are some good regulations to have, but I think people need to be keenly aware, one, of who is handing down the regulations, and two, what they eventually lead to potentially.
So may I offer a few counterpoints?
No.
Okay. Move on. Unfortunate.
I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
I'm not deeply familiar with the Chinese gaming industry, right? Like, I know probably more than a lot of dipshits on Twitter, but I know
I don't know
shit, right? I have read a lot of people say that you already need like a government ID to play games, right? Like in China. So to me, like, you've already, if your concern is this like slippery slope that like, where does it start? Where does it end? Requiring people to plug in their government ID to play games is already like, they've got the control, right? This is nothing by comparison. The other thing I will say is that when you were talking about totalitarian regimes, right? Which China is, which the US is quickly becoming, they don't need excuses to flex that power. And to me, like, not implementing restrictions on gambling is not gonna stop like a conservative like Congress and Supreme Court from banning gay people in video games. You know what I mean? Like, that's gonna happen regardless.
I mean, that's the thing though, right? Like I agree with not letting kids buy loot boxes. I don't think, yeah. I think that's a recipe for disaster. But I think that adults should be able to gamble if they want. Like, it's a choice that they make.
I think that's a complicated discussion, right? Because that's what it boils down to, is gambling, and like, you know, where do you draw that line? And I do feel like if we were able to ban like FanDuel tomorrow, like, I'd probably be behind that personally. But I also recognize that there's other people who are going to say like, man, that's got to be your own choice to ruin your life with gambling, you know? And I see where you're coming from with that.
Well, it's like, you know, I mean, if we're going to go that far, I mean, why not just ban alcohol? Because, you know, like, you'll cut down on DUIs, you know, like, why not ban, you know, like once we start.
Alcohol has a lot more reason to be banned than weed does, you know, right, but I'm also on the side of both those being legal. So like, I get what you're saying.
But like, know? Yeah, like you see where I'm coming from? Like, yeah, like once,
for sure.
Like I wouldn't be as concerned about it. And full disclosure here, I wouldn't be as concerned about it if we weren't dangerously on the precipice of an actual authoritarian regime in the United States. Like I would be far less concerned about it, but it is what it is. And we're here now. And these are the things.
It's the perspective from which you are approaching this that a lot of other people are not seeing.
Got a different perspective on this stuff than a lot of people do for various reasons, but
yeah.
If Sam, I can throw something else into the mix here, which isn't going to provide any clarity, but it's just intended to muddy the waters even further with a third equally aggravating point. That is the fact that this is going to have a huge knock-on effect, because NetEase and especially Tencent own a lot of stuff, and they have their fingers in a lot of stuff. I've had, like, there are multiple people, and this is not intended to knock or shame them, who have been like, oh, well, what does Tencent do again? And I'll list some companies. I'm like, no, they're not. That's like Supercell, or that's you know, Fat Shark. And it's like, no, and Tencent owns them. Like, go look up the official list of companies that Tencent either owns or has invested in.
It's insane.
I tried keeping up with it, and I can't. They own Riot Games, you know, the juggernaut that is League of Legends, the music and entertainment company disguised as a video game publisher. They own Riot. Okay, Arcane season 2 coming up, like, that's Tencent. I'm gonna be there day one for it, but like, that's Tencent's money.
If I could interject real quick, did you know that Tencent Music Holdings is actually a U.S. company
on paper? Yes.
Yeah, That's yep. that's just that I learned that recently and it kind of blew my mind.
Is that anyway, like a Temu situation where it's like we're headquartered in Boston and it's like but it's
because they're incorporated in the United States.
Right.
Correct. Exactly.
That's a good comparison. Go ahead, Sam, please continue.
But like Platinum Games, they have an investment in Platinum Games. Turtle Rock, who made the old Left 4 Dead games, and then more recently they did like Back 4 Blood. They own them. Fat Shark, who do like the co-op Warhammer games like Darktide.
Wait, hold on, what'd you say?
Fat Shark.
Fat Shark. Okay, I Fat love Shark. That name.
Like, it's a great name. They look up their logo. It's a great logo. Absolutely fantastic logo. They have investments in publishers like Ubisoft, like Electronic Arts. They had them in Activision
God
Blizzard.
Damn,
until
that's
very
a good shark. I just looked him up.
It's a great shark.
That's a
right?
great
it's a
shark.
Great logo.
Look at that boy. Look at that belly. Incredible.
Like, it is a fat shark.
What
it's
a lad.
It's a really, really darn good shark. I got to tell you. The point I'm trying to make here is they own a lot of stuff, and a lot of the companies they own have nothing to do with what is being regulated here. But I promise you, they're going to be hit by the repercussions of it.
Well, it's like what we saw with Embracer all year, right? Where as soon as the actual, like, them buying all of these studios, Embracer was just to prop them up for the, you know, sale to, like, get venture capital money. And then when that didn't fall through, they had to turn around and pass the pain on to the studios that they bought. So, like, for sure, a lot of studios that are not responsible for the kinds of, I would say, reprehensible games that are being regulated here are going to be the ones that feel the pain when Tencent and NetEase pass it down. No way around that. So,
yeah, I don't know.
It's a lot. Ahead, it's a lot. And I don't blame anyone for having messy, complicated feelings about
what's
going on.
It's a slippery slope. Like that's basically what it comes down to. And I think what John is trying to say, it's like, if you start doing one thing, it's just gonna to keep snowballing.
So I'm not a big believer in being like reactionary in any way. Obviously I think like being reactionary is one of the worst, like attitudes you can bring to the table. I'm
Eric,
kind
I have
of
one question on that.
Yeah.
How'd that work out for you on the Monster Hunter movie?
It didn't.
Jesus, Brit.
Because I should have been a reactionary on that one. I'd have been more accurate. But like I am a deep reactionary for being against the slippery slope. Like, and that's just because I was a debate kid. I did debate all through high school. I did debate in college. And fucking talking about slippery slopes and dismantling that shit was like, I got so tired of it. So I do not believe in slippery slopes, like as a rule. But like in this case, again, it's not that it's because that we're wrong that like overreach in games could happen. But like, it's more a matter of like, I'm a big believer that these fucking right wing, tyrannical governments are going to do what they're going to do, and they're going to come up with it. Like, they don't need to make a nice clean transition from one step to the next. They're just going to do the shit they're going to do.
I don't like our potential tyrannical government getting any fucking, you know, nifty ideas.
I mean, they're already like trying to get rid of depictions of queer people in all movies and books, right? So like, the thing is, without touching anything in the gaming industry, we're one step away from them saying that gay romance in Fire Emblem gets the game outlawed, you know?
But also, I don't normally enjoy invoking, like, the powers of corporations that are essentially their own company or their own countries.
Yeah.
But also, over here, they have to deal with the House of the Mouse, and Disney is running rings.
It is deeply fucked up that corporations have been our best defense in a lot of ways against like complete fascism in the United States. That's really gross. I dislike that so fucking deeply.
I'm not saying I love it, but I'm just saying it's a fact.
I don't like that Disney has been a more effective fighter for some of this shit. That like that makes me feel like eating socks. I don't know. Shit.
Like, yeah. You know, it's an
that was the best analogy you could whip up.
I don't like that at all.
Do you want to eat socks, Britt?
That's terrible.
I can't say I do.
I think I made a comparison point that we can all agree with.
So like, I'm a proponent, like as progressive as I am, I'm also a proponent of the fact that, you know, we live in an imperfect world, right? And sure. and it's never going to be, you know, like, you know, all of us here are very anti-corporation. All of us are. That being said, we're never going to live in a world without a big corporation. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
So all you can do
is try to put checks in place to temper it, you know?
Exactly. So, you know, it's kind of like saying, well, I want to live in a world without guns. And it's like, well, me too. But I mean, the reality is that that is simply...
It's kind of hard to put that genie back in the bottle. As somebody who is like deeply anti-gun, I don't see... But also, like, it's not my job to figure that out, and I'm grateful for that every fucking day, right?
And so, like, you know, I try to think about the things that we can affect, you know, or that government can or cannot do, or the things that, you know, we as citizens, you know, can or cannot accomplish, and, you know. Are we able to ultimately stop what a rogue government is what could potentially do with too many gaming regulations? Like, no, we can't. I mean, go out and, you know, don't vote for Donald Trump, I guess, is what I can tell you. But aside from that, you know, all I can do is talk about the things that I think are essentially double-edged swords. If that makes, like I feel like, or to put it in an even clearer way, I feel like the messenger is important here. Does that make any sense?
I get from the beginning, I understand what you're getting at, right? And I don't fully disagree, right? I do think it is worth noting that like
let's not fool ourselves and say that China, like, think that China gives a shit about the miners and loot boxes. I mean, they don't. Like, they don't give a shit.
And like, I try to balance, like, the fact that, like, yes, like, anti-Chinese sentiment and, like, xenophobia, like, go, like, way too fucking hard in the current political climate, and we are way too quick to, like, go at anything that is China in a way that is...
I want to be clear. I'm specifically talking about the government here.
Right, well, but a lot of people are not capable of making these kind of breakdowns, and a lot of people don't understand anything about... Like, there are people who genuinely think that the Chinese government's communist. In any meaningful sense. And it's like, no.
Chinese government has not been communist for decades.
China's communist in the same way that 1940s Germany was socialist. Like, it's a word you can use. Buffalo Wild Wings are not made out of buffalo meat. They're not wild either.
Well, like,
you know, they're pretty tame wings for sure. But
mid wings.
Very mid wings. I make way better wings. I want to flip to a different side of things, though.
We can't talk about wings.
I know, we gotta have some wings. We gotta find a wing place when we're in Boston.
Yeah,
we'll make
we need
that
to go
happen.
Back to that place.
We gotta find that barbecue place. Yo,
we gotta find that barbecue place.
We'll
again
find
there.
That barbecue
with the,
place
with the burn ends.
It was walking distance of the Westin, so we'll find it. Because even Reb's from had spent how long in Kansas City? Even Reb was like, this is pretty good shit. So here's how I want to flip the conversation away from governments and tyranny and sounding. I don't want to sound like we're suddenly part of fucking InfoWars. You know what I mean? But
we're trying to avoid that at all costs.
Yes. Watch Knowledge Fight. Listen to Knowledge Fight. It's not a video show. Whatever. But if this is happening, it is happening. What kind of effect does this have on the gaming industry outside of China? Right? Because from my perspective, this ends up having a ripple effect on mobile gaming as a whole. Right? Because if you make games that, like, are you going to make China-specific versions of these games that fit to all of these regulations? Or do you think a lot of these regulations spill over to many, though not all, like mobile and free-to-play games in the global market that also target China?
I think one of my big issues is that if this gets done, if they start cutting people on like mobile teams and people who are working on mobile, like Sam in chat just said she's on the mobile department. And like if things like this are happening, then more people in this industry are losing their jobs. So I guess I would say that like if it were to happen over here, I don't know if it would be the best thing for the industry right now. Just because industry jobs are so hard to get and obtain and, you know, keep. And you know, it's, and I don't want to say we shouldn't have any kind of restrictions on like gacha games because people could lose their jobs. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that it's like, if something like this were to happen, we have to be prepared for the consequences that come with that. And like, I'm all for it. I'm like, get rid of that shit. You know, I'm like, I don't, stop making me pay money to play a game. And, you know, it's the same thing with like DLC, right? Like, give me a completed product. Don't have me buy something to like advance in a game.
At the very least, let me buy the one character I want to buy. That's instead of making me buy 50 loot boxes to get the one pull.
You know, I say that, but then like going back to Blizzard and Overwatch, Overwatch had loot boxes, and then they switched over to, well, if you want a certain skin here, you can buy it. And it's ridiculous.
Brutal, those prices.
It's brutal, right? So it's like, that's something else we have to be afraid of. If this is going to happen, if they're going to start capping things and make it so that you can buy the specific thing you want, you better be prepared to like spend more money than you were on those random fucking boxes. Because I think that was like the niche and what got people like spending more and more. So it's like, oh, this is only $5, so it'll be fine. Like, $5, another poll, you know? Like, $5 a pull that like adds up is obviously a lot of money, but if you like stare at, you know, a screen that says $25 for the skin, you're gonna be like, I don't want to fucking do that. You know, it's like when you're like $3 away from free shipping, right? And you're like, oh, I'm not gonna buy that. Like, fuck that. I want to pay for shipping. You know, like,
I will.
But like, it's funny because in a similar way to like we were talking about how, like your Tencents and so forth, like kind of trickle the pain down to studios that weren't responsible for that shit. Like a lot of these mobile games rake in insane amounts of money, and
it's ridiculous.
Like, you're right that even if those games continue making money, if the amount of money they make drops, you will see that pain at many companies get passed on to, you know, the development teams and the marketing teams. Because it's not enough for these things to be profitable and make more than they spend. They have to be, you know, we want X percent, you know, on EBITDA. You know what I mean? Like, we want, you know, growth, infinite growth. And it's like, if I could change that, I would. But knowing that that's the way that that global capitalism works, like, you know that changes like this that reduce profitability,
they're gonna find a way to make up with it for somewhere else.
Yeah, and they're gonna find a way to
screw you. Yeah,
and it's gonna get passed on to, you know, if it can't get passed on to the consumers one way, then it'll get passed on to the people who work on these things.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's sad. There's no way around that.
Yep,
it's a good point, Britt.
Britt always makes the best fucking points.
I really don't.
Britt's so smart and funny. Can we just acknowledge this?
Stop.
I'm going to say this.
Incredibly cool. Like, her glasses look amazing. Goodness. Like,
yeah. I can't.
Like, you just can't accept a compliment? No.
Dumb and stupid and, you know, I mean,
yes,
yeah,
I am.
Sure, that's, I'm attractive, but that's all I've got going for me. So.
Oh, Joe was talking about himself. Good to know.
Yeah.
Somebody said Britt is the best person on SDGC.
Delaby, yeah.
I mean, not wrong. Not wrong.
I'm legally obligated not to take part in this discussion. So
yeah.
So we're getting close to our sign off time here. I will
two
say
really
that
big stories that we just kind of have to wait to see how they unfold, sadly.
Yeah, like a lot of this we're not going to know. Like, we'll have another conversation about this in 6 months when the ramifications, or like,
it'll
when
be
the
more
ripples
than 6 months, but
What's that?
I don't know. The mobile gaming stuff, we could see reactions to very quickly, especially
given, we could. I'm just
given
I'm
how rapid
that,
those the Chinese gaming industry shrunk.
Basically, what I mean is like, you know, the stone has been thrown into the pond, and now we'll see how long it takes for the ripples to kind of make real waves here. So, you know, who knows? Could be next week. Could be
it's
a month
not
from
a
now.
Lake,
could be two
it's
months.
An ocean.
Yeah. What's whatever, Brit. It's fucking water. Who gives a shit?
Thank you,
Sam. Fake Alan Wake
reference.
Fans.
Yeah,
fake Alan Wake fans.
I looked in the background and saw one of Brit's kids climbing over the couch, and for a minute, I thought there was an intruder
sneaking
that had come
out the
door.
Speaking of Alan Wake.
And Brit, I was about to be like, Brit, get out of the house.
Hey, John, can I end the podcast by making your day?
Okay.
Maine just kicked Trump off the ballot, too.
Oh, no. Oh, no. That was hours ago.
Yeah. I didn't know if you'd seen it yet. I hadn't seen you say anything.
Oh, no. I knew.
So. Make some motherfucking popcorn because this shit's going to be funny.
He is back on the ballot.
This is not a global politics podcast, but, you know, fuck that dude.
Be aware he is back on the ballot in Colorado.
Yeah. Look, none of this is going to stop him, but it's very fun to watch.
Yeah, like, and all of this.
We got nothing else going on for us. Like,
all of this will be overturned by the Supreme Court anyway.
Yeah.
It's all going to get overturned by
the
Supreme Court.
Look, anything that makes him bust a blood vessel in his head is one thing closer to him fucking stroking out on the toilet and dying. So
I'm all for it.
Keep it coming, man. This is our chance.
You know what, Derek? Why don't you bring us home tonight?
I can do that. Thank you all for joining us on our show tonight. I know that a lot of people probably have much better things to be doing in this limbo week between Christmas and New Year's. I hope everybody had a good set of holidays, regardless of what holidays you celebrate. I hope everyone has a good New Year's. We have a Discord. There we go. Me and Rar both posted it in there. The Discord's over 400 people. It's a wonderful, inclusive, heavily moderated space for people to talk about nerdy shit and just life. So it's a great Discord. Be in there if you're not already. I'm going to plug the Patreon because remember that subbing to us here on Twitch or throwing us even just a buck or two on Patreon every month helps to get us replacement equipment and helps to get us, you know, pay for us to get to things like PAX more than, you know, once a year.
And speaking of PAX, real quick, Derek, if I could just cut in, if there's any members of our community going to PAX, let us know. And if we have enough people, we'll do like a community meetup or something.
Just meet us in general. Like you see us, like come say hi. We're cool to like too many people. Fucking remember when John Eric Bentley, the voice of Barrett, was on the show and said that he like saw us going out to lunch and like didn't want to approach us.
Oh my god.
Because we seemed like we were too like on a mission and it was like, dude, no.
Dude, no.
We were getting brekkies. Like you can
Yeah, please.
So you know, yeah.
Whatever we're doing at PAX, we're not doing anything more important than engaging with you guys. Yep. So.
I don't know, man. This panel's going to be some shit.
Except for the panel, which we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, once it's officially approved, we'll talk more about it. Although we've already gotten word that we're in the clear. So will the panel be recorded? Absolutely. In fact, I just over Christmas finally got a Zoom H4n Pro recorder, I got to borrow one once and take to PAX West 2019 and use that and a pair of Shure SM58s to do those really good recordings.
Derek, who's emceeing that panel?
Oh man, the current plan is for me to be the MC and presenter.
Yeah. Are there going to be any like voice actors on the panel?
Well, Britt and Finn from the show will be panelists. And then we're gonna have a few other people that we will wait until it's official.
Interesting.
But yeah, some major stuff. We got good stuff coming up in PAX, and that stuff only happens because people occasionally throw us a few bucks on Patreon. We do this for free. Everything we make is free. So like help us pay for our hotel rooms at least, folks.
Yeah.
It's greatly appreciated if you can. I know times are hard. Other than that, the only other thing I have to announce is Reb Valentine is coming back on the show in January. Is a big one for us. She's going to be on. I would have to double check the DMs. It's going to be one of the shows later in January, but I'd have to pull up my text messages, and I don't want to dig through all of that right now. Wait, hang on. Here it is. 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 January 25th. Nice. We'll have Reb on to do a sort of 2023 gaming industry year in review, which will be a great companion piece to our, what's the word I'm looking for, to our game of the year discussion. Is the holiday party still happening?
Yeah.
Britt, what's the time and date on that?
The 30th, normal showtime, so 9 p.m.
Eastern,
8 Central.
That'll be Saturday night.
That'll be Saturday, yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be Saturday, yeah.
So, Discord holiday party.
It's the
party.
Day before New Year's Eve, so y'all get crunk and then get crunk again.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
We had so much fun last year.
When are we not crunk? Yeah, I gotta get some tunes in that playlist.
It's gonna be a really good time.
You posted some Japanese artists and everybody was just fucking
Rita
diving.
Sawayama's, I mean, I don't know. She's not, I mean, I think her dad's Japanese and her mom's like French or something. Anyway, I don't know. Fucking pop stars. But yeah, we were into that shit. But yeah, that's, join the Discord, throw us a few bucks, keep an eye out for cool pack stuff. And aside from that, please remember kindness costs nothing, but so does being an asshole. That also costs nothing. So, I guess be kind because it's just the right thing to do rather than
except,
because of
like,
its monetary.
Also, just also caveat that don't be kind to like bigots or Nazis or anything.
Right.
Like,
punch a Richard Spencer.
Don't do that.
Just fucking be cool, y'all. Peace.
Happy last show.
Happy last show. Hopefully, last show. Nobody has said that 2024 is going to be their year, and I think it's because we just all know, right?
Yeah.
Like
I'm like, if it happens, great. Like,
yeah, we've all decided to stop tempting fate. Fuck this
year.
Fuck the last several years. Maybe
podcast wise, it's been great.
People think 2024 is going to be better.
No, 2024 is going to be the biggest hellscape of them all. Oh, take care of yourself, folks, and be safe on New Year's.